Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
Blog Talk Radio.
Boys and girls and children of all ages. In case you're wondering, we're not actually late this time, logging in early. This show was scheduled to start at 4:30 for a reason, and I didn't actually log in until now. Reason being is because I wanted to give wanted to take into account all of the people we've lost just already in 2022. It's already started out to be quite a interesting year in 2022 as far as losses go. I think in retrospect, it's always a thing that we have to say goodbye to legends of TV, film, and whatnot. People who become part of our lives, people we feel semi-entitled to a little bit as far as understanding the peoples and whatnot. But, enough about all that. I wanted to give the people who we've lost already in 2022 a moment of silence, I guess. So I purposely didn't log in or start the show until a few minutes. People kind of reflect upon to explain that. I feel it's just I feel like it's okay to engage with whatever. To like a post that someone passed away. That's like saying you liked that the person died. Does anyone else see an issue with this? I know I'm not completely alone. And, as far as, the wrestling business, for example, I've lost a lot of my friends in pro wrestling over the years. I started wrestling when I was 18 years old. I started wrestling school. And since I was 18, I've been to numerous funerals, wakes, of people in the pro wrestling business who we've lost due to drugs, alcohol, accidents in the ring, just classic old age, heart disease, various other different ailments. The pro wrestling business and the entertainment business have one thing in common. We don't have a long life expectancy. A lot of people contribute to, the over-conditioning of the athletes. I don't think that's so much the case as much as is injecting chemicals into yourself to make yourself better than you are. I think that's where you might have some issues in that aspect. But as far as, contributing to society and as far as, whatever else, people often lose track of the people in which these people were. And the other thing that happens is, it's a person that, society has forgotten about. And then when they pass away, all of a sudden the tributes start. And, you meant so much when you couldn't be bothered to reach out to that person while they were alive. How many times have we seen tributes from actors or wrestlers who have had gripes with other wrestlers, and then the person passed away, and then the wrestler or the person in the film industry has some remorse, and then will start to reflect upon those decisions? Well, now it's too late. You could have, rectified that situation before the person passed away. The fact that there was no effort done on your part to do that is kind of disheartening until they were dead afterwards. That's kind of like challenging someone to a fight, right? Or, saying something and then expecting someone to respond when you know they're not there. Let's put it in wrestling terms. This is like that heel who cuts a promo on the babyface, who they know isn't there because the babyface is either, you know, is already, they know for 100% the person's not in the building. But the heel wrestler will sit there in the ring and say, you know, this person had no guts to fight me in the ring, and they run the person down while the person's not in the ring. And they know the person's not in the building. There's no way the person's going to come out there to confront them. So they'll say whatever they want, tear the person down, and then all because they know the person is no longer in the building to respond or not, or isn't able to be there, right? Now, how do I compare that to someone who pays tribute to someone or talks about someone when after they're gone? Well, because then the person who is gone can't respond to whatever it is that you said. Maybe what you say about, you know, we had this fond memory about certain such and such, and that wasn't true. One of the things about pro wrestling is not everyone is as honest as they appear. Over the years, we've heard some wild stories for some of the biggest stars in wrestling. And just recently, we've heard about various wrestlers acting, quote, inappropriately all over the place, and then other wrestlers backing them because that's, quote, how we do things. I was taught by Killer Kowalski a long time ago, when it comes to wrestling, you keep your eyes down and ears open. You keep your eye, you watch what's going on, and you stay out of it as much as possible until it affects you or and whatnot. You want to be respected, and it's about respect. And sometimes when someone disrespects you in pro wrestling, you have to give them, quote, the receipt. Now, what that means is, let's say you're in a ring and you're in a match with someone, and you guys call a spot, and you guys are supposed to do this spot, and the person who you're working with either botches the move, or maybe they hit you with, quote, a potato. A potato is actually hitting someone, making physical contact, you know, hitting someone when you're not meant to, at full contact. Well, now you're annoyed because this person decided to go off script, so to speak, go off the rail. I don't want to say script because it's not how wrestling should be either. But when that happens, you know, you will give that person a receipt to let them know, listen, don't do that again. The receipt isn't out of spite, and the receipt isn't to purposely maim the person. It's to let them know they messed up, you know they messed up, and you acknowledge the fact that they messed up, but you're not going to be disrespected by them or anyone else, which is where the receipt comes from. Maybe instead of, you know, when it comes to be your turn to go on the heat spot, that means when you switch off what's going on in the ring. So the person's working you over and they potato you. When it's your turn to have to come back, so to speak, maybe you hit him with a potato, or you hit him with a stiffer shot than you normally would as far as a chop goes, to say, hey, listen, you messed up. I know you messed up. You know you messed up. Don't do it again. That's a receipt and whatnot. So you can't let people disrespect you in the ring, just like you can't disrespect people in the locker room. If you have an issue with someone in the locker room in the old days, you talked about it in the locker room. You went into the shower room if you had to, with you and the person. That's it. Usually everyone wasn't far away listening to the commotion. And that was it. You guys walked into the shower room and you dealt with it. You had it. You talked about it. You either went in as friends or you came out one guy worse for wear. But we live in a society today. I was just sending out a tweet earlier to some friends of mine, the technical work rate guys, actually. Shout out to them. Hope they're doing well, and Happy New Year to them. They are YouTubers who are fans who also have a pretty good understanding of the wrestling business. I was on their podcast a while ago. We tried to get them on this podcast a while ago. There was some technical issues, go figure. Since then, we've fixed that situation, and hopefully at some point they'll come back on. But when I had, you know, what I tweeted them is about how the wrestling business has changed so much, and how both social media and how the influence of a person who's not had any kind of relevance in wrestling has so much influence on who does what and where. And one of the things that I have to agree, but also, you know, have to go half off on, the ticket work rate guys often say that, you know, the wrestling marks are the ones who wrestle work are ruining the business. I think that's a 50-50 thing. I think the problem is, yes, that these marks are overrunning, the smarks are running the asylum, so to speak. The smarks are the ones that are sitting there and influencing a lot of their influences. These smarks want the wrestlers and the wrestling industry are giving them to make them happy, to make them come back, to sell whatever. The reality is pro wrestling wasn't built to pander to all of the fans. You see, as a wrestler, you want to perform the best you can. You want to provide the best story content. You want to force the best possible performance that you can give in pro wrestling, the best you can. Not listening to the fans. It is kind of an underlearned term. For example, how many times have you ever gone to either a local show or a bigger show and a guy will have another guy in a headlock and the fans will chant boring? Or maybe because there's a lot of technical wrestling going on and a lot of flippy stuff, the fans are chanting boring. Let me tell you how we respond when you chant boring in a match. If you chant boring in one of my matches, I'll put a guy into a chin lock and sit him there for about 4 or 5 minutes until you guys figure out the fact that, listen, I know what you're doing, but you're not going to dictate my match. And I think the issue is it's a 50-50 thing. These smarks want these things from the promoters, and the issue is the promoters and the wrestling industry gives in to these people as if they have some type of knowledge of why that's a good thing. It's not. We give so much relevance, so much credit to a guy who hangs out in the dumpster hoping to listen for some type of wrestling scoop. And then we as a society and people in general, the smarks pander to this guy like he knows something about wrestling. What does he know about wrestling? Nothing. He's not from pro wrestling. He's never done pro wrestling. He's a wrestling smark like the rest of you. He's your Pied Piper, so to speak. But you let him tell you how to think as a fan. What does that say about you? And you look at the things. We all know who that is. And, of course, I would say his name on this show. But here's the thing. My fans are sophisticated enough that they don't care. I would hope my fans are smart enough to know that I don't need to pander to someone else by dropping a name of someone, giving them free publicity. Because the fact of the matter is, he's not seen, in my eyes, or a lot of the guys in the business, as a helpful situation. I think he's a parasite, and I think he is one of the biggest issues with the pro wrestling industry right now, because he's one of those people who sits there and talks about what he thinks things should be. Back in the day, we used to call them armchair bookers. Armchair booker was a guy who sat on his couch at home, a fan who sits on his couch at home and sits there and says what they think that, you know, the wrestler should do. You know, back in the day, you know, the guy with the armchair booker might say, you know what, I think Roddy Piper should beat Hulk Hogan. I think that this should happen. I think that should happen. But here's what the issue is with this certain person is, instead of admitting to the fact that you're an armchair booker, you sit and present your thing as facts. You make up a rating fact that someone else came up with, not you. And it was done as a rib, not something to be taken serious. And you, the moronic armchair booker that you are, you thought it was a real thing as far as rating a match. Let me give you some names of some people. Gorgeous George, Ray Stevens, Pat Patterson, early days. Roddy Piper. Dusty Rhodes. Ricky Steamboat. Several other different people. I can give you names off the top of my head of people. But let's take away some of the more recent people. Let's talk about the legends of pro wrestling, the reason why we're all here. Let's talk about Classy Freddie Blassie. Let's talk about Freddie Blassie, Gorilla Monsoon, Jesse Ventura, Superstar Billy Graham. Let's talk about Gorgeous George, one of the first arrogant heels of all time. The Sheik. Okay, there's some names of some classic wrestlers. They wouldn't give two craps about what someone says on Twitter, on Instagram, and they would never dream of taking any kind of rating system as a serious measuring stick for who they were as a performer. You want to know how they got over? The ticket sales. The people who came to see them. The heat that they got, that's how they knew they did their job well. I'm going to tell you a story about Jazz Fitness again. When I started out in the wrestling business, I started out as the face character, Jazz Vengeance. I was the 6 foot, 240, actually back then I was 6 feet tall, 210 pounds. I am the man, myth, and legend. I am Jazz Vengeance. Don't be afraid. Be terrified. That character is a baby face. He's a good guy, right? And I did that for so long, up until my injury in 2003, that I never thought I could even be a heel. Of course, in wrestling school, when I was training, in 98, 99, you know, Kowalski and the trainers there, Slick Wagner Brown and whatnot, had a thing for me. They would train me. They had me cut promos on guys, and everyone who was in the school, I'd have to cut a promo on. If that person was a face, then I'd have to cut a heel promo. If that person was a heel, then I'd have to cut a face promo on them. And I had to do that at the end of every single class we had. I remember we had two former students come to the school who worked for ECW, Perry Saturn and the late, great John Cronus. Perry Saturn is horribly misunderstood and is probably one of the most underrated wrestlers of modern time. He is a workhorse. He is a legitimate tough guy. He was in the military. He was a tough guy. He is an actual hero. He has stepped in and almost risked his life to save someone else at no cost of his own. That's a hero. That's what Perry Saturn does. A lot of people don't know that about Perry. But he is a tremendous athlete. He is a tremendous human being. He's a real-life hero. But he doesn't get a lot of that credit. And, you know, I had the honor of meeting him not long ago again. Re-meeting him, I should say. And I thanked him for the time in the school that he and John Cronus came. And truth be told, John Cronus and Perry Saturn, who were the Eliminators in ECW, behind the closed curtain, they weren't the best of friends, but they studied at Kowalski's, they graduated from Kowalski's, and they became a tag team in ECW called the Eliminators, probably one of the most legendary, you know, ECW tag teams of all time. Pioneers, if you would. They were there before the Dudleys. And they came in as guest, trainers and stuff. We did these seminars once in a while. They'll bring in former students who come in and talk about, you know, what it's like to be in the business now. And at the end of that class, I had to cut a promo on everyone in the school like I always did, but now I had to cut promos on both Perry Saturn and John Cronus, the Eliminators. These are guys who I've seen in ECW who have been tremendous people and people who I have nothing but respect for. But here I am. And at that time, the Eliminators were faces in ECW, so I had to cut a heel promo on them. And Perry Saturn and John Cronus enjoyed it, and they got into it. And I had seen Perry Saturn at a trade show a number of years ago. He has, you know, since changed a lot and stuff like that. A lot of people have said all kinds of things about Perry Saturn and his state of mind and so forth. But when I had talked to him and I brought that up, there was a glimmer in his eye, like he remembered that. And I thanked him for taking that time to help me train. Now, let's go back to modern time. So I learned how to train as a face, for the most part, from the time I graduated to the time I was injured as Jazz Vengeance, the good guy. So after I was injured and I had to spend some time away from the ring by doctor's orders, when I returned, I had put on a few pounds, but I was still in the ring. I could still work a ring like, you know, any of the cruiserweights could. I could still run the ropes. I could still do all the drills. I still could cut a promo better than anyone else in their company or anywhere else. My aunt and I was looking to get back into pro wrestling. At that time, Kowalski had already passed away, and there was, you know, where do I want to start? Where do I want to go? I wanted to, you know, dip my toes in, so to speak. So when I, you know, after working with all these different other promotions or whatever else, my uncle and his buddy, where they used to play roller hockey, they had a skating rink, a hockey rink, and they said there was a wrestling school going on down there. So I went down there to see what this was all about. And when I met the promoters and stuff like that, and I decided I was going to come in there and help them out and, you know, maybe dust up on a few things as well with this modern wrestling. Because remember, I was trained by Kowalski, and we were trained differently. We were trained to call a match in the ring, so the match looks, you know, fluid and realistic. You'd call the match in the ring, audibles and whatnot. In modern wrestling, they're taught to talk out their match before they go to the ring, plan everything out, and then go to the ring to do it. Now, this is something that people like Macho Man Randy Savage would perfect. He was one of those people that would talk out every spot he would do in the match beforehand. He was in a lot of ways the barrier for what modern wrestling is. Not the barrier, but he was the kind of the groundbreaker for modern wrestling is Randy Savage. Because, you know, talking out the match in detail before going to the rings, even working on it before going to the ring, that was a Macho Man thing that he made famous. I'm sure there have been other people along the way that also did this. Savage was known for this. One of the reasons that Ricky Steamboat matched, and he and Ricky Steamboat had at WrestleMania 3 that everyone says is the greatest match of all time, is because of how much time and effort that he and Ricky Steamboat worked on that prior to go out there and doing it. And this goes back to the Hogan and Ultimate Warrior match. A lot of people who are not overly fond of the work by either guy said that was probably the best match you can get out of either guy. What you don't know is the fact that they worked the entire match out the night before in the ring so that they would look good when they did it. You know, these are the things of wrestling. This was, I have to say, this is probably influenced by a Randy Savage kind of a thing who talked everything out before going to the ring. Modern time, that's how you do it. I personally don't necessarily agree with it all the time, because I think when you're in a match and you're in a heated battle, things happen. You might miss a spot. You might miss a cue, or, you know, this doesn't look good at the time. And then what you planned on doing before you go out there, someone else did that move already, and now you got to change that on the fly. Or what happens if someone's injured? What happens if someone botches? You can only control what you can on that end. And that's what people fail to see. But I do have a lot of respect for the people who can go out there and do all that. And, you know, if it works for them, it works for them. But the company I joined, and they said, we were thinking about making you a heel, Jazz Fitness. I said, Jazz Fitness. So remember, my name is Jazz Vengeance up to this point. And I was the good guy, baby face, the voice of the people, the Pied Piper of the people, so to speak. That's what I was. The gimmick idea that they presented me was that Jazz Fitness was going to be an out-of-shape fitness guru. So, you know, basically, I'm a parody character of a character who's already on television as a parody character, which is, at that time, I was a parody character of Simon Dean, who was working in WWE at the time. Mike DeLuge, exactly his real name. Wicked nice, awesome guy. Bucci, Mike Bucci. Fantastic guy. Wicked nice guy. And actually, fun fact is that he actually endorsed Jazz Fitness at a fan fest when both he and Jazz Fitness were in the same midst of each other. But anywho, the promotions presented me with this Jazz Fitness character. Because I was a little bit bigger, and it didn't look like I could be very athletic at all in the ring. I could be. That the fans don't have to know that. And basically, I would be a heel guy, and because I could talk, they said, we're going to give you a talk show segment called The Fitness Center, where you're going to have various people come in, and, you know, you're going to be the heel, you know, talk show host, and usually probably end up getting your ass kicked by whoever the person is or help them get over. That's what I did. But there are two things that happened here. One, as this time went on, I almost felt like these guys were ribbing me because of my size and whatnot. And they're giving me this gimmick of a Jazz Fitness. The music they gave me, I'm Too Sexy by Right Said Fred, and all of these things, right? You know, when you're in the moment and you're inside the now, it's hard for you to take – you. Sometimes you do need to take a step back and look at the larger picture. And thankfully, I come from the Northeast where we have a lot of local legends who train a lot of people who, you know, it's never frowned upon to ask the guys who have been there before, who have been around longer for, you know, advice or tips or whatever in a respectful manner, of course. Don't be annoying about it. And I remember talking to two guys, their names are Brick Housebaker, who has a wrestling school in New England, as well as, Brutal Bob Evans, who some people have a mixed review on. I have nothing but respect for Brutal Bob Evans and Brick Housebaker and people of that magnitude. Yeah, these are guys who maybe you didn't see headline WrestleMania, but they're also responsible for training some of the future stars who are there now. I guess there's something there, right? Anyway, Brutal Bob Evans and Brick Housebaker were out in the locker room. They had some other things going on. They were working the show today on the same show I was on, the Fitness Center. And I told them how I think they're basically ribbing me these, you know, the promotion. They have me going out there just before the popcorn match, which basically what that is, that leads into the break where there's a intermission where people can, you know, get pictures with people and do a meet and greet or whatever, get popcorn or whatever. And then they go back to the show the second half. Well, the Fitness Center was going to debut and, you know, I asked them, hey, can you look at this and tell me what you think? And what they told me when I told them I thought they were ribbing me ahead of time is that if you think that they're, you know, ribbing you, the promoter, turn it on them and use that as motivation to put yourself over by getting everything else over. What does that mean? Now, I clear that might confuse a lot of people. But basically what that meant was when I go out there, be the person who they want you to be, but do it to your work ethic and your best capabilities. Get this character over, in other words. This is kind of the scenario with Dusty Rhodes and the polka dots, right? Because Dusty Rhodes, who a lot of people will say is one of the best in promos and one of the best in-ring performers and one of the best showmen in pro wrestling, WWE gave him polka dots, yellow and black polka dots, and he had to wrestle like that. A lot of people saw that as disrespectful, but guess what happened? Dusty Rhodes still got over, the American Dream Dusty Rhodes, right? And that's kind of what they were implying, you know, be the Dusty Rhodes of the WWE. Go out there and put the polka dots on if they wanted me to wake the polka dots and make those polka dots go over. And then when I got done and I came back, Brickhouse and Bob Evans pulled me aside and they said, listen, you asked us, you know, about you getting, you know, ribbed on, so to speak. Whether it's a rib or not is irrelevant. That's how it is. But we can tell you the facts because we watched. And for me, who was so focused on, you know, I feel like they're going to rip me, and me focused on what I'm going to do in the wrestling thing, what I'm going to go out there and do. When I'm in the here, I don't pay attention to these things, but these guys are observers out in the back, and they're watching from the locker room. And what they said is, you know, the match prior to me, which was like the one of the tag team titles or something, you know, people were semi-invested, but there were some people in the souvenirs in the food stand, and there were people walking around, and people not invested in that, really, not paying attention. But when I went out there, and I did my bit as you know, the Jazz Fitness in the fitness center, everyone was at ringside watching, giving me a hard time or calling me all kinds of names because that was what they were supposed to do, because now I'm a heel. I'm a bad guy. And I didn't think people could not like me. But not only did I find out there's a certain knack for irritating people, but, you know, for me in the moment, I didn't realize that the entire ringside had all of the fans there. And they were there the entire time I was there, and they didn't like me, and they want to let me know how much they didn't like me and appreciate my thoughts about their sports heroes and whatnot. My first guest was a female wrestler. Her name was Vanessa. Very nice girl, hardworking. And this is also one of those things where I often question, like, why in pro wrestling you can't necessarily have the male and the female matches. Because when you train wrestling school, there's no separate male and female class. You train with everyone else. So why should you discriminate like that? Just have them wrestle. If someone thinks they're tough enough to go up there against the guy, let them go up there against the guy. I have no issue with that because then we're all trained the same. But anyway, Vanessa was, one of the most nicest girls you could ever meet, first of all. Very quiet. Behind the back in the locker room, she was kind of, you know, down to earth, relaxed, blah blah blah. Right? She was she was a girlfriend of one of the tag team guys. Actually, he's a really nice guy, Johnny. Johnny Stallion was his name, and he was a fantastic guy too. He helped develop Jazz Fitness just as much as anyone else. A lot of people didn't even get to see the match that I had with him. That was one of the kick-ass matches you'd ever have, and I was fortunate enough to have it. And, you know, it made me look good. At that point, it helped me with my confidence, Johnny Stallion, as Jazz Fitness. And his girlfriend was Vanessa, and that was the promo I had to deal with. And in this scenario... In this scenario, I'm a heel, and I had this girl on the fitness center. And before she comes out there, I'm hamming it up, and I'm telling people about this hideous creature that's supposed to come out here. She's fat. She's ugly. She's a slob. By the way, this girl is probably about 98 pounds, soaking wet. A lot of people would probably find her attractive. I personally like, you know, when meet her in the ball. This is me. Not my cup of tea, but a lot of people would probably find her attractive and whatnot. But I'm cutting this promo like she's this hideous ogre. And here she comes to the ring and all the people pop for her and, you know, whatnot. And they really don't like me because I cut her down. I cut down their sports heroes. I cut them down. I picked on the people. I did all the fundamentals, all the, you know, this is, you know, the booking job of a heel kind of a guy. Ran down all the checkpoints. And then she came out, and we did the fitness center, and it wasn't a very long one. It got cut down quite a bit from what it was. I think the promoter wanted it on there, but at the same point wasn't – I don't think they expected it to get over like it did. And what Bob Evans and Brickhouse said to me is when I did my segment, everyone was at ringside giving me a hard time. Everyone was in ringside cheering her on, telling her to give me the old one too and whatever else. And I didn't see that because I was in the ring and I'm in that moment. But they observed this. And I went back. And later on, we had another fitness center. And in that fitness center, you know, there's a video and it shows some trainers who, by the way, the trainers are guys who are still in the business, very hardworking trainer, probably the best in the business. Ryan Waters and Mike Pava were on site and they were there and they were sitting in the bleachers while, you know, me and the guys are in the locker room and stuff like that. But here's what I noticed, and here's the thing about pro wrestling. Sometimes we tend to get a little bit of an ego, right? We do have a tendency to get a little professional jealousy, right? So, you know, I used to think that I didn't like Ryan Waters very much, truth be told. He came across as kind of a jerk, if I want to say. He came off as being kind of a hard ass. But he knows his stuff, and I have respect for him for that, and he knows how to get the heel stuff down. He knows how to get that heat. I respect that. He tells it how it is. I respect that, too. But then I observed something. When I was doing the fitness center, and this is now, I got to say, this is, as I watched it, as it was already filmed, I looked and seen him and Paver and some other people in the bleachers watching from afar. The ring was set up in the middle of a hockey rink. It was a roller hockey rink, and that's where the ring was, which was where the fitness center was. But I didn't notice a lot of that. But here I am watching on the playback, and they're in the lock, and they're in the stands watching, and I suddenly understood. I got kind of where they were coming from, and I could understand it, and that's when I realized that Brickhouse Baker and Bob Evans' advice about getting myself over to get the company or whatever else over did work. Because here's the thing, and this kind of almost backfired on the company. I think it might have backfired on the company. The couple matches before that were the New England Championship, which at that time Ryan Waters had, and Mike Pava was in a match similar for that not long before that. There were people who were invested, but when I was doing the fitness center, everyone was watching. Everyone was upset with me. Everyone wanted to tell me where to go, how to get there. All the angry fans, all the young kids, all the little old ladies, all the middle old men who I was picking on. They were giving it right back to me. And when I looked in the stands after I already watched, and I'm looking at the stands on the video, and I see them in the stands watching this, all these fans interacting with me, all these fans giving me this heat that I was intending to get. I understood, and I got that. But I also realized that I did my job. I got Jazz Fitness over, regardless what anyone wants to say about Jazz Fitness. I thought it was a ridiculous gimmick, an out-of-shape fitness guru. So, like, in other words, I would go and make up my own exercises because jumping jacks is too much work. But if you do jazzy jacks, which are the worst exercise ever, you're not going to get any kind of a workout from jazzy jacks. Or jazz ups, which is basically push-ups on your knees, which, again, you're not going to get much of a workout. But it wasn't about that as much as the presentation. Because I could do a jumping jack, and I can do a sit-up and a push-up, and excuse me, I think it's just my coffee. By the way, Dead Sled, our fantastic coffee, by the way. I am drinking the we're running low on our Dead Sled coffee intake. We're going to have to put an order in and talk to our friends over there. But by the way, they're planning on coming on here eventually is the Dead Sled guys. I mentioned that on the show prior that they were going to be coming on, and I did reach out to them, and we're just waiting on them to let me know when they're going to be available so they can come on and talk about our coffee. Sorry, I got on a sidetrack right there because I was drinking my Dead Sled coffee. That's the some more of the Elvira. Almost gone, sadly. Anywho. But the thing about that lesson I learned was that I can understand why there would be some, quote, heat, if you would.
Heat in wrestling is when you have like a gripe with someone, a grudge, so to speak. That's called heat. I don't know if that's really gone away with those guys. I think some of those guys might feel a little bit of that still. And when I think back at guys who I helped train, I've got guys that, you know, I worked with or I trained for or trained with for people, I look at successes they had, and I don't take it as, you know, an insult or whatever, because they go on to do bigger things, and I'm glad I did my job as a wrestler. There comes a time when the old must get the new to look good, because it's going to be the future who carries the business, not me. That's why it's important when you're a veteran or someone who's been around the block a few times, who knows what you're doing, who knows you've earned your spot, so to speak. It's important to give that rub to the right people so they can get over it and make the business continue longer. I think this is a lost art that has happened a lot. I think with people like Hogan and Warrior and people of that era and that in that, you know, time period who were so worried about, quote, their spot, they failed to, you know, build the guys who they could have and made them probably bigger than they were perceived. I mean, you had to wonder, why isn't Hogan working with guys like Jake Roberts? Or why isn't the Warrior working with guys like Rick Martel? I think that would have been entertaining, but here's the thing. It wouldn't have worked because they're different styles, and they'd be worried about the wrestler outdoing them, and that's not what wrestling is supposed to be for. It's about putting on the best performance or putting on the best show possible to tell the story in an effective manner, but in the same sense, making yourself and your opponent look good in doing it, not making you guys look like hacks, and not worrying about your ego, checking your ego at the door, because sometimes the right thing to do is by taking the pinfall and letting the young guy go over on you so you can move him up. I have to give props to one of my tag team partners, for example, who I see do this. Now, to be fair, I am still not watching modern wrestling on a regular at all. I still keep track of things. I still know what certain things that are going on and whatnot, or supposedly going on. But I talk to my friends on a regular basis. And I wanted to share this with you guys. One of my early tag team partners in pro wrestling in the Ring of Honor, I had two fantastic tag team partners. I was part of the original Straight Edge Society with CM Punk, who you guys, well, who I think everyone knows who that is now. I think more people should know who he is. One of the biggest things that we had in common was the fact we believe in the straight edge lifestyle at that point. We still do. I don't believe in drugs and alcohol. Yeah, I drink caffeine. Punk has coffee once in a while. But, you know, as far as, you know, other things, we don't let that influence us in the ring or anything else like that. I think he and I come from a similar background where we come from people doubting us. We came from a similar background where we're not the biggest guys, but we're the guys who have the fight in us. We both had a similar training style. We both were trained in various forms of combat. I had multiple martial arts. CM Punk had multiple arts. We both agree in the straight edge and lifestyle. That's one of the reasons we were the original Straight Edge Society in Ring of Honor. Punk was leaving, and he helped, you know, propel me and the cord into that. And then I had AJ Styles for a little while. And then he left with a phenomenal vengeance. Because remember, I was a face back then. This is going back to Ring of Honor days. That was like 2001, I want to say. 2001, 2002. And it was a good times, let me tell you. And if it wasn't for those guys helping me as far as the tag team thing goes, I would understand a lot of that. But this is what I'm saying going back to them. So I'm going to give them both props right now. I know a lot of people have mixed feelings about CM Punk. I can only talk about what I know of Punk because I've been there in the locker room with him. I know a lot of people like to give him a hard time. I know a lot of people have their own opinions, and they're welcome to them. That's what makes the wrestling business fun, is you're welcome to have your own opinions. To me, he's a good friend of mine, and he's someone who I value as a person who has built himself and relied on himself and followed through with everything he said he wanted to do. Regardless of the outcome, he at least tried it and did it, rather than just say he's going to do something and not do it at all. That's what a lot of people fail to see. But a lot of props go to Punk, because right now he is single-handedly saved AEW. You can credit that to, you know, Bryan Danielson came from Ring of Honor and whatnot. And Bryan Danielson worked in the company in where Jazz Fitness was formed before that. So to say that, you know, whatnot. And then you got, excuse me, I got my throat. I'm telling you, I talked for a little while. You get a little choked up there. Anyway. But then I look at guys like my tag team partner, AJ Styles, when we were at the Phenomenal Vengeance. He did a lot of the high-flying stuff. I did a lot of the ground-and-pound stuff. We worked well together as a team. He was a young guy. I was a young guy. He was going to, I think, Japan, and then he was going to go to TNA. I was going to remain on the circuit. Ring of Honor for a little while longer. Then I would go, I think it was NECW, I want to say, after that for a little while. And I got to work with the great Ric Fuller for the first time. Another tremendous New England talent who doesn't get a lot of credit. He should. And Slick Wagner Brown, one of my trainers and a good friend of mine. Anyway, going back to AJ Styles. And I've seen and heard of it. And I think a lot of people are failing to see what that is. When you see a guy like Omos that he's working with as a tag team, and this guy is, you know, a colossal as they're pushing him, this monster, who do you put him with to help him look good? It makes perfect sense to put him with AJ Styles, because they did that with me. He was with me for a while. That propelled me to get better as a wrestler. What they're going to do with Omos from the tag team thing, I don't know, but here's what I do know, is that AJ Styles is not forgotten the lessons he learned in wrestling school. He has not forgotten what it is in wrestling. He hasn't forgotten about the fact that sometimes you have to let the young lions roar so that the zoo can continue to open. I know I'm talking philosophy, yeah. This is Wrestling Psychology 101. Because if AJ doesn't get almost over all these up-and-coming stars over, people like AJ Styles, who get a loss, those, we call that a rub in wrestling, when a person who has a name will have someone go over on them, quote, they'll get a rub of that person's popularity on their name, right? But look at all of the people in which the AJ Styles has given the rub to. And he has had phenomenal matches. It's in the name. It's not a gimmick. It's who he is. He can have a match with a tin can and make it look good. He is more respected than some other people who have the same kind of mindset, I suppose. But he is someone who isn't afraid to lose or to make himself look like a fool, to put the product over, to put the opponent over, because he gets that. So I don't think AJ Styles and CM Punk and a lot of these guys get that kind of credit to make these guys who are building these people. And I don't care what anyone says. The only reason a lot of people are tuning in to AEW is because CM Punk is there. What is he going to say, do next? They don't care about anything else going on in AEW. They don't care about who says what and all these other people that no one's ever heard of. Because you know why? Because CM Punk
is the one building MJF, who was irrelevant before this. I think MJF is a good heel. I think he's got some skill. When you put a guy who can talk against a guy who can talk, that's money. That's why this makes sense. But Punk can do it in a way that's intelligent enough to get both MJF over as well as keep himself going as well, but make the company look good. And people can debate it about it all day, but the writing is all over there. AJ Styles, people can make fun of him all they want. He looks like a soccer dad. You know, he looks like he's old and he's da-da-da. AJ Styles can still put on a 5-star match, if that was even a relevant thing, because he doesn't care about a star match, because he wants to put on the best match he can to get his opponent over and himself over. That's how AJ does things. And he does it well. He made almost look like a legitimate badass, because he's a giant guy, yeah. But here's the thing, AJ Styles is like a pit bull. He's small, but he's tough. He can go. And he will fly. He can do things that not a lot of people can in the ring. A lot of people compare, always say one of their dream matches. I get these emails a lot. They would like to see the match between a prime Shawn Michaels and a prime AJ Styles. Who would win? That's an interesting debate. A lot of people compare Shawn Michaels being the greatest in-ring performer. But backstage, in the early days, he wasn't very well respected by people. He wasn't very well liked and because of his own antics. I think Shawn Michaels will tell you that. He wasn't the way he should have been. And he himself has, you know, openly said how he has crushed people's polls and everything else. And that is why I'm going to tell you that AJ Styles is the better of the two. AJ Styles doesn't lose sight of the fact that what his role is, regardless if he is supposed to get over or not, he can still make his opponent look like $1 million doing it. John Cena, who is someone who I know as well, and he's from the area and stuff like that, wrestling was not his first passion, and I don't really like the fact that a lot of people forget that this wasn't his first calling. He wanted to go into bodybuilding. That didn't work out. Then he went to wrestling. And yeah, he's done great stuff. I'm not going to take that away from him. He's done great things in movies. Not great movies, by the way. I'm not going to give him props for his movies either. Is he making... See, you can say that John Cena is a, quote, success story. But, I mean, until he wins an Oscar, to me, he's not a success story in Hollywood. And I don't see him being, you know, the lead role in the greatest drama coming from whatever studios coming next. But I'm not going to take away the fact that he put the work in to get himself over as a that. But on the same sense, it's because of guys like a Kurt Angle and guys like an AJ Styles, a guy like JBL, a guy like Eddie Guerrero. These are people who could wrestle a tin can to make it look like $1 million. Welcome to John Cena. Undertaker. The people in which John will work with are guys that will both propel them, but as much as them, it'll make him look good. It'll bring out his best performance. The greatest John Cena match I've ever seen, it's not even mine when he was a prototype, that wasn't the greatest. The greatest match I've ever seen him have was with AJ Styles at SummerSlam. That has to be because AJ Styles led that match at his pace, had to push John Cena to that. The promos leading into it was phenomenal, no pun intended. And that's why when this debate ever comes up between Shawn Michaels and AJ Styles, I look at all aspects of who the person is, what they did in their contributions. Locker room status, when Shawn Michaels was in his peak and in his prime, he was a douche. Let's not candy coat it. He was not well-liked. He was constantly whining and crying about something. He was not acting and behaving in a positive manner. He was not well-liked by everyone in the locker room. He would, and his cronies would, try to hold other people back or force people out. That's not really respectful in the way to win the popularity contest.
yes, years later he would make amends, but we're talking about in their prime. Okay, well, let's look at AJ Styles in his prime. In his prime, AJ Styles has been all over the world and been successful all over the world and puts on a, quote, WrestleMania match every match he's in, whether it's the first card, mid-card, last card, it's always going to be a match that AJ Styles will elevate to whatever that needs to be. He is not afraid to put the other guy over to make that person look good, to make him look good, to make the story arc look good. Shawn Michaels would complain and whine and cry about putting someone over on a regular basis. So when you compare the two in their prime, then you'd have to say that the person who would be better would be AJ Styles. Yeah, Shawn Michaels can do some acrobatic stuff. He can't do the acrobatic stuff AJ Styles can. AJ Styles doesn't necessarily have to do all the flippy stuff that he does because he still looks like he can go anywhere else. Shawn Michaels can hit the sweet chin music. AJ Styles can hit you from multiple variations of kicks, including that Pele kick, which Shawn Michaels has never been able to do. I've never seen Shawn Michaels do a Pele kick. He does the sweet chin music, which everyone does. He stole the, you know, the super kick has been done over and over again before Shawn Michaels did it. It was done as a setup mat, a setup maneuver for something else. Michaels made it a finisher. I mean, this is kind of the Hogan leg drop. But people overlook that because of the performance that Shawn Michaels likes to deliver. He likes to have the best match. But what people fail to see is what he sacrifices and the people he steps on to get that match. AJ Styles doesn't do any of those things. He just goes out there and has the best match. Doesn't care beginning, middle, end of the card. That's what he's going to do. This has turned into me talking about pro wrestling from where I was, and we have a little bit of time. Well, we have about an hour left, so I want to get into the other points that I wanted to talk about outside of wrestling. But these are my viewpoints of wrestling, and just to circle back and recap this whole thing, I'm going to be talking with the technical work great guys, and hopefully we'll work on either me coming on their show, them coming on my show, or both, because I think that they add value to this. They add value to the show and they add value to the wrestling business because they're not afraid to say what everyone thinks. And I think that's something that is respectful to me anyway. I think they're respectful to the wrestling business. I think people overlook that and they see as being disrespectful because they're honest about their opinions. Yeah, Adam Cole doesn't realistically look like a badass champion, but only now people can see this in AEW? No, Adam Cole's been the same Adam Cole since he was in NXT. If we remember, that's what Pat McAfee was saying the whole time they were working with them. People fail to see this. Before I move on to the next subject, I do want to give one other shout-out. Pat McAfee, he is also a podcaster. I know he's definitely probably not listening to this podcast, but I'm going to tell you this right now. He's a football icon. He's a podcaster. He currently works commentary of SmackDown. The only reason I would ever watch SmackDown is because of Pat McAfee on commentary. Bar none, the greatest promo I have ever seen, the greatest performer I have ever seen. And he's not even from pro wrestling. He's a wrestling fan who, I have to say, honestly, in the beginning, when I was watching wrestling on the regular, we'd always see these, quote, professionals or these other guests do these openings to wrestling. We see them on the countdown shows. What's the other dweeb's name? There's another guy. Something Roberts or whatever. You guys probably know who I'm talking about. I don't care much about him to piss him on or put him out. Pat McAfee, however, I thought originally when I first started seeing him, he was going to be another one of these guys. Until he started cutting his promos, until he got in the ring with, backed himself up and got himself in the ring with guys like Adam Cole and all those guys, and he made it look amazing. A lot of people want to talk about Bad Bunny being a great wrestler, doing a great job.
Pat McAfee was in NXT. He put on the best matches, and he didn't have that many with Adam Cole. He got probably the best matches you can get out of Adam Cole. And Pat McAfee has respect for the wrestling business. Pat McAfee has a voice that you listen to because he's honest. He's one of you. He's a fan. One of the most annoying things is who he's paired with. Because outside of Pat McAfee, there is no other commentator WWE has that I enjoy listening to. And I have tried. Michael Cole is insufferable. And Pat McAfee, thankfully, can save that aspect. You know, Pat McAfee, if you watch his energy, he gets into the matches. No other commentator has ever gotten into the matches. If you watch Pat McAfee, he stands doing commentary. How many guys have you ever seen in the last 30 years in pro wrestling stands doing commentary at a Raw or a SmackDown? None of them. That's going to be the answer. Pat McAfee gets into these matches. He sells these matches better than anyone else could. These matches are terrible. Pat McAfee makes those matches phenomenal. Pat McAfee right now, if I was going to watch, would be solely to hear Pat McAfee doing commentary. Corey Graves is someone who takes this heel thing. He wants to be a heel commentator. You're not good at it. People say that you're a nice guy, and cool. Here's what I know. When I heard, when I was listening and I was watching Raw just before I quit, I heard and listened to when you had one female commentator on your Raw, you and Michael Cole there, and cut her out of the picture altogether every week. That's not a rib. That's reality. That person, apparently, you're good friends with. Good for you. To me, as an outsider observer, you're disrespectful. You don't have to talk over her, cut her down to make her look like a clown. If you're her friend, you should be elevating her, not disclosing her. She left the company, and she still remains close with him. I guess maybe behind closed doors, he's a really nice guy. You know, and that's the good thing about wrestling. A lot of guys in wrestling can be really nice, real life, and be absolute jackasses on presentation. But when you look like a douche, act like a douche, you're on commentary, you add nothing. Pat McAfee is bar none better than you any day of the week. He's not even from pro wrestling. And he performs better wrestling. I don't remember a lot of the – I can't tell you the last time I saw a Corey Graves match. And I can't tell you – and if any of the Corey Graves matches that are stand out in my head, but I can tell you three that stand out in my head with Pat McAfee. So here's what I'm going to say to Michael Cole. I know none of these people are listening. Let's be realistic. But Pat McAfee should be the lead commentator anywhere. You know what? Give him the Irish guy. Give him one of the. Give him the woman commentator on SmackDown. Get rid of these other schlubs. Michael Cole's been there way too long. He's tired. He looks tired. I'm sick of hearing him. A lot of people are tired of hearing, listening to him. He's old. He's irrelevant. He was never good to begin with. Let's call it how it is. If you really want to do something impressive with the commentary, fix that first. That's a small thing you can do. You have all these people you're cutting, WWE. This is a tip, last tip of pro wrestling. I'm going to move on. But here's a little thing. You're cutting all these people. Some of them have some talking skills. Some of them have directional things. Some of them have good story arcs. Instead of maybe cutting them, how about moving their role? Get rid of guys like Michael Cole, Corey Graves, and all these people who add nothing. They're just opposites. Michael Cole has the boring dad voice. Just, he doesn't even sound like he'd be cool enough to be any part of that. Corey Graves comes out as a douche and just way overboard with the douche and cutting down his other commentators. None of them on Raw are any good to listen to either. None of them are any good. You have Jerry Lawler. You have all these people available to you. Mix it up. Find a new commentary team is what I'm going to tell you.
That's where you got to start. You want to bring people in, bring a better commentator team in, because then at least you have somebody who can tell the stories better than the people you have now, because they are awful, all of them across the board. Thank you. Now I'm going to move past wrestling. But again, props to Pat McAfee being one of the greatest modern ring wrestling personalities in pro wrestling. Keep it up. Someone needs to save it, and hopefully it's you. Anywho, moving past this, I wanted to talk briefly about a couple other subjects. We only have 45 minutes left of this podcast already. I want to do a film review and a TV review, and I had hoped to want to do a review on Cobra Kai, but I'm wondering if maybe I should wait until I complete it, because I am sticking to my guns. I want to give you this update. You know, last year when Cobra Kai Season 3 came out, I binge-watched the entire season one day. It was the day it was open. The day it was available. It was early. And then I had nothing to watch the rest of the year. I was very upset about this. So I said going forward, I was going to do what I did for Sweet Tooth. I was going to watch one episode a week. And I am very happy to say that I have stuck to that. I watched one episode a week, and it drags it out a little bit longer, yes. And they granted, you know, spoiler, but I don't care about spoilers because I don't pay attention to social media like that. It's not like it was back in the day, and I don't listen to it all that often. I don't have time for it. But I do want to touch on a few things. I want to review an episode. Oh, I can do that for you. And I'm in season four right now, and I know other people have already watched the show already, probably already done. That's cool. If you're not done, don't worry about it. Hopefully you get to this point. And I'm not going to do a lot of spoilers, but I am going to say this. On this show, the LaRussos, this is going back to the entire story arc in general. The LaRusso kids are, can we just all agree that they're the biggest douches of anyone else? When I originally was told what Cobra Kai was supposed to be, I originally was not down for this idea of Cobra Kai. I wasn't even willing to give it a chance. Because when I was growing up in the 80s and I was actually doing martial arts, you know, the Karate Kid came out with Ralph Macchio and that whole thing. Where my mind went versus everyone else is exactly where they went with the show, which is funny. You see, I always said, well, we follow Daniel LaRusso coming to California, moving to a new area. He's a new guy. We're seeing things from his point of view. It's all about Mr. Miyagi. He was my great one. He's the greatest, Mr. Miyagi. He saved me, da, 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 da. But, I mean, I think I've said it before on this show several times in Karate Kid, Daniel LaRusso instigated a lot of fights that he had no reason to. The whole beatdown that led into Mr. Miyagi beating up the students, that was instigated by Daniel LaRusso, doing something that had nothing to do with him. He could have left it alone. He didn't have to get involved. He would have had a great dance, and he would have been fine. He would have been home dancing in the shower. He was built in. Wouldn't have had a problem with the Cobra Kai guys. Wouldn't have had a problem. Would have had Elizabeth Shue, whatever. But instead, he decided to play this water game and soak someone who obviously isn't afraid of a confrontational. And that's what people fail to see. People fail to see, I should say, is the fact that he instigated a lot of the things that he, quote, was being bullied for. And then he did this several times in the course of that movie. He did the same thing. Now, let's fast forward to Cobra Kai. I wasn't going to give it a chance because I was told it was going to be, you know, Daniel LaRusso, and it's going to be the opposite. Johnny Lawrence, after these years, he's going to be the good guy, and LaRusso is going to be the bad guy. But in reality, I always viewed that anyway. A lot of the things that Daniel LaRusso would get involved with had nothing to do with him, shouldn't have been there to begin with. The whole thing with Chosen didn't have to happen. Mr. Miyagi probably could have figured out everything in Okinawa by himself. He would have came back to Daniel LaRusso. Everything would have been fine. Nope, Danny wanted to go all the way to Okinawa to be with Mr. Miyagi. Respect there. He wanted to be with the guy who helped him out. Or did he go with him because he was afraid he couldn't make it on his own? People fail to ask that question. Because if you remember, LaRusso just graduated from high school, and the money that he used to go to Okinawa was for his college, which, you know, flip forward or fast forward to this season, it was revealed that he used that money to go to Okinawa. He didn't go to college. And modern time, I think it's not a spoiler to tell you that Dan LaRusso in modern time currently is a car salesman. Is this a metaphor for what Dan LaRusso is, a con man? Because that's what it sounds like, and that's what it looks like. Now, that being said, this is going to, you know, it's funny, this Cobra Kai review is going to lead into pretty much the other thing, which is toxic relationships or relationships in general, and recognizing when it's time to go or whatever. We can actually mold it in together. So I'm going to tell you where I am with the Cobra Kai season 4, and I can only give you up to this point. So, and without giving any reviews, without any giving spoilers, rather. But basically, we already know that the LaRusso kids are pretty much responsible for a lot of these mishaps. Anyway, I want to call back to episode 1 of Cobra Kai. How was Johnny Lawrence involved with a lot of this? His daughter and her friends trashed his car that Danny LaRusso had to fix. Johnny Lawrence could have ratted out his daughter and said, hey, you know, LaRusso, your daughter smashed up my car with her friends. He didn't do that, though. Danny LaRusso immediately tried to shut down Johnny Lawrence, who was at that time supposedly struggling as a, you know, a handyman, I guess, of some sort. Danny LaRusso, the car salesman, pretty successful at it, apparently. You know, I have to say, I can understand someone having a gripe about, you know, someone was to do an illegal move or something he didn't believe you to be good. I think it was kind of nonsense that after the first thing that they would have lost contact. They lived in the same area. I'm curious why it took them all this time to see each other since that one time. You know, Miyagi saved them once. That was referenced in the season current. When, you know, Creed was getting involved. See, the story arc we're in right now in season 4 is basically they were at the end of season 3, we saw the Eagle Fang, yes, this is the name of Johnny Lawrence's new group, and Cobra, and the Miyagi-Do, which is Dane LaRusso's thing, come together to try to take down Cobra Kai, which is assumed as now the villains again. When originally they're the faces, now they're the heels, now they're the heels again. But now we're seeing something else, though. Are the Cobra Kai guys the heels? Because now we're going back to what we started with Cobra Kai. Yes, they were fighting